COVID forced technology companies to embrace employees working from home. 5 years later, the industry is faced with an intense debate about the advantages and disadvantages of managing a remote workforce. More recently, leading tech companies like Microsoft, Salesforce, and Dell have imposed new return to office or RTO policies, requiring employees to spend time in the office. Where is this all heading? What will the work environment of the future look like? I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today I will be joined by Micah Remley, the CEO of Robin, a workplace management platform that helps companies manage hybrid work environments. We'll be discussing the challenges management teams face as they try to get the work in the office genie back in the bottle. So let's get the insight engine humming here. Michael, welcome to Tectonic. First of all, let's just start with Robin in general. How long has Robin been around?
Yeah, thanks, Thomas. We've been around for 10 years. Oh. We serve a couple thousand companies across 85 countries in 10,000 office buildings. Our technology is present in about 10,000 office buildings around the world.
So if you've been around for a decade, obviously you started before COVID and the whole big aggressive wave on remote. So what was the catalyst for starting the company 10 years ago?
Yeah, so the catalyst for starting the company was really that workflows in the office weren't really being efficient at all. And what we saw was that organizations weren't making the use of their office space. What we saw was there were remote teams at that time. Something called activity-based work, which is still a very important concept, was becoming really more important in the office, especially as tech companies were taking up more and more office space. So we saw the need for technology to make the office experience better for everyone involved, as well as allow companies to make more efficient use of their office space. As you remember, during the late 2010s, rent prices were skyrocketing, offices were full, things that seem very foreign to us right now. So there, we're solving for a very different problem, which was how do we get more people into the same amount of space, which actually we've kind of come around to a little bit. Now it's how do we get more people in the same amount of space, but on Tuesdays and Thursdays, maybe, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe not so much on Mondays or Fridays. So it's a very different problem that we're helping people solve for now.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. So obviously, we've seen this flurry of return to office mandates emerge over the past year. And let's start right there. I mean, why do you believe companies are starting to do this now? What do you see there when you work with companies?
There's a fundamental disconnect between when managers, C-level execs say flexible or hybrid work, they mean something very different than when employees say flexible and hybrid work.
Okay.
So you have a fundamental disconnect between what the two sides are talking about. So when leaders say flexible and hybrid work, it means mostly in the office with some flexibility to work from home a day or two a week, with some flexibility to take your kids to soccer practice if you need to or whatever it might be. When employees hear flexible and hybrid work, they think they interpret it as remote first with the option of coming to the office, which in practice, by the way, means they rarely, if ever, come into the office. It means a very small percentage of them use the office regularly. The data shows us out very clearly. And then for most people, they come into the office once a month. They come in for a team event once in a while. So what you have is just very different interpretations of the same exact word. One group thinks it means mostly in the office with some flexibility around it. The other group thinks it means mostly at home with some options to come into the office once in a while. That's why you're seeing these mandates, is that you have to reconcile this difference between how the two important groups in this conversation interpret the same terminology.
Yeah. So why do you believe that companies are starting to draw a firmer line in the sand on this to, you know, recast that definition, like you're saying, and say, look, what this is what we mean by that. It's not, you know, remote first. It's actually office first with some remote capabilities. Why are they pushing on that now after several years of not pushing on it?
Yeah, for a few reasons. So a couple things. The first is there's lots of thoughts, biases, opinions when it comes to this topic. But if we look at the academic research, which is done in controlled environments, allows us to clearly see the differences between remote work and in-person work. The fact of the matter is that hybrid work, where you spend about half your time in the office, is actually the optimal thing. That if you're fully remote, more silos get created in the organization, hierarchies become more important, decision-making gets slowed down. The research like clearly bears this out for fully remote work, especially organizations of some size. Obviously, small startups, that's a very different thing, or small businesses, that's a very different thing. So any organization, 100, 200 plus people, that's what you start seeing happening. On the flip side, there are real benefits to working from home. So the research has really clearly shown that about half the time in the office, about 2.5 days a week, is actually optimal. It allows for that heads down time. It allows the flexibility of not having to commute into the office every day and getting some time back into people's personal lives that time. On the flip side, it allows for that in-person collaboration, communication that allows you to overcome the negative impacts of purely remote work. The other thing that's really interesting, I can talk about this as a CEO, is you see these directives from leadership because it's really hard to build culture in an entirely remote organization. Once again, especially as you continue to scale that organization. So I think part of what you're seeing is people really clearly saying, all right, research, collaboration, everything else are really important. But on the flip side, it's culture is really hard to build when you're 100% remote. You just end up having a workforce that is a bunch of mercenaries that can then jump to another role that might pay them higher or offer them something else. So I think what you see is, from a leadership standpoint, the combination of having the most productive organization possible, which is what every leader aims for, and on the flip side, the ability to actually build some culture that helps you reinforce that productivity that you're trying to build as you scale an organization.
So, you know, what I think is interesting on this, and I'll just put some of my cards on the table. I have been working remotely since 1996. I was worked for a company called Silicon Graphics, and the labor market was very tight then. I wanted to move from the Bay Area to Ohio, where I'm originally from, and they supported that. And so I've been a virtual employee ever since then. So that's the perspective I have. But I completely on board all the things you're saying, right, in terms of culture, in terms of collaboration and those benefits. But let me just put this question on the table. I believe, you know, watching tech companies operate post-COVID, you know, I think one lesson tech companies did learn is when COVID hit and everybody had to go remote, the fear always was like productivity was just going to be terrible. And people realized, oh, that's not true. So I think it set a new balance point for what companies would operate in, right? So like you're saying, hey, 2 days in the office pre-COVID, that would have been a crazy thought for most tech companies. Crazy thought. So now there's a new bar. But here's my tough question for you. And I know, you know, what you guys do for a living, you help with this. But I think one of the challenges that a lot of tech companies have with these return office mandates is employees are sitting there and they're saying, okay, you're telling me, you know, you want culture, you want collaboration, you want, okay, I'll come into the office. But quite frankly, I don't see a difference between when I'm in the office and when I'm working at home, except the fact that, you know, I've got to go to do this stupid commute and I've got it. Yeah. So if there's really no quote upside to me, then yeah, I feel like you're putting this burden on me because you want eyes on, you know, your employees, but I'm not buying in to these benefits. So how do you see companies overcome? Because I think that's real. I think you got to give employees a reason to believe that there's upside, whatever that upside, how you want to define that upside, to actually coming back into the office. So how do you help companies frame that?
It's extremely real. So, and let me ask you, answer two questions, because you made another point earlier on there, which is the pandemic happened. You saw productivity as far as top line goes across most organizations continue to go well during 2020, 2021. What was happening with the broader economy during that period of time?
Right.
Like, what's happened at most tech companies since 2022?
Oh, it's been tight for sure. Right. Different story.
So once again, why do we see this? It's, hey, maybe once again, a lot of people will point to 2020 and 2021 as, hey, this is a sign that things are working. Mm-hmm. I could easily look at 2022 to 2024 and say, hey, maybe that's a sign that things aren't working at all when it comes to remote, right? Yeah. So I think you're right, though, to then you got to break it down and look at the next level down. And I'll give you some really good examples that we have across our organization. So the thing that you have to realize is, in that world I just talked about where 2.5 days are remote and 2.5 days, let's just use that as an average because no one really does 2.5 days, but we'll use that as an average. 2.5 days are in the office. You have to have intentionality about what the in-office time looks like. Mm-hmm. It can't look like your remote time. So what we see is when employees have that complaint, and rightly so, if I'm going to come into the office and I'm going to do the exact same thing that I do when I'm at home, why'd I bother going into the office at all? Well, I might as well save the remote time. So we actually saw that in our organization, and I'll use some examples from our organization because I have the first hand. I'll give you some examples from other organizations too. The first thing we saw was that we were hiring, we looked at this 3 years ago, we're hiring remotely like crazy still. We're using the same thing we did during 2020 and 2021, 2022. And that just compounded that concern that you just had, which is, hey, my entire team's remote. I'm spending all day on Zoom calls anyway. Why don't I just do that at home? I don't need to come into the office. So we had to fix hiring first. So to be clear, like if we wanted a strong in-office culture, we had to think very specifically about what teams were in the office, why they were in the office, the type of collaboration we imagined and wanted to happen in the office. This is the mistake everyone's made is I just throw my doors open and I pretend like it's 2019 again. Mm-hmm. It's not working at all. So for us, we fixed the hiring first. We said, all right, hiring's got to happen back in home office for the most part. The second thing we did was we looked at the activity that was happening in the office. And what we saw was that the activity, the one thing is through our platform, we get this great view into what's happening in the office. Mm-hmm. So we looked at meeting rooms and we found that 80% of meeting room usage in our own office was a solo person sitting in that room.
Wow.
That means solo person sitting on a video conference call. Yep. And so to your point, like, all right, why are they going to want to come in if they're going to sit in? So we said, that's not right. How do we fix that? So first thing we did was we've established something. So we have a goal. I wouldn't say it's a mandate per se. People have to be in the office 8 days a month with one specific thing. You have to be on Tuesdays. We have Tuesday team days. Mm-hmm. And because there was this idea of coordination that we were seeing that employees were coming in on different days, but they weren't coming on the same day. So they weren't changing their behaviors to align with when team members, because there's all that variability. So it's like, all right, I'm going to keep all my one-on-ones. I'm going to keep all my meeting schedules, my sprint reviews, all on the same schedule. When really what we need to do is coordinate that stuff and say, all right, your time with remote employees should be on Mondays and Fridays when you're working from home. The time when you're in the office, that should be in-person one-on-ones. That should be in-person whiteboarding sessions. That should be real collaboration. So by encouraging the team to change their behavior, how they're scheduled. Like we did a very specific process of work through that. The second thing we did was establish team Tuesdays. And then each individual team has another day where they have a team day per week. What we've seen is that 80% of in-person solo meetings and conference rooms has fallen to, last I looked, it was 34%. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a drastic reduction in that because people are actually doing what they're supposed to be doing in the office. Talking to their fellow employees and working and collaborating.
Meeting teams.
It's what we want them to do, right?
Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. You said first you had to fix hiring. Yeah. Where are you guys based?
Boston, Massachusetts. Where you're seeing
You know, I was in Boston just a couple of weeks ago. I should recognize the skyline, but I don't from the angle that you're sitting in there. Great city, Boston. So, and a great tech hub, obviously, as well. One of the advantages of virtual was the fact that you could hire talent anywhere. And you didn't have the friction of saying, well, hey, Thomas, you live in San Diego and you know, you don't want to go to Boston. You love the weather in San Diego. We really want you. So tell me a little bit about your experience in terms of recruiting talent with that requirement. Because you're saying, hey, if you're not in Boston, I assume you're saying we want you in Boston. How's that conversation going?
You have to decide what your identity is. Mm-hmm. So I have nothing wrong with back to culture, everything else. If folks want to create a remote company, not the path I choose, but I completely understand why people want to do that. You got to pick a lane though.
Yeah.
You got to pick a lane. Do I care about in-person or do I want to be remote and understand that? It's this in-between world where I think everyone gets messed up and there's a whole bunch of people that are still in that in-between world. They haven't picked a lane yet. Yeah. I think that's why you're seeing all of this friction. And when I say in-person, I don't mean 5 days a week in person. I mean just... Yep. Hey, people are actually coming to the office. They're using it at least a 2 to 3 days a week. That's sort of my bar for in person, right? So For us, obviously, being in person was really important. And when I said, hey, listen, we got to fix hiring first, I had pushback from my managers. I said, well, Mike, I can't find talent. And I got to tell you, I dismiss it, Thomas. To be clear, you're telling me that you can't find that level of talent within the Boston area. Our team's not that huge. It's not like I'm Google and I'm going to suck up all the talent in a specific area if I go on a hiring spree.
Yeah.
There's a huge amount of talent here. We have the best universities in the world. To me, I actually think if you put the focus on it, is it a little more work? Sure. Mm-hmm. But that being said, is absolutely, like, I can look at our own hiring. I can tell you we've hired amazing talent. We've hired it in Boston. We have people that are aligned with our in-office culture, and it hasn't slowed us down at all. It's a change. I think back to people are resistant to change in general, and you will hear, well, I can't go and find my best talent and everything else. But once again, to me, you got to pick a lane. You got to say, this is what our culture dictates. And that's what culture is in an organization.
Yeah.
It's the thing that helps you build what you're trying to get to. And I think what I see it is people's hesitancy to actually pick a lane and make real decisions. You got to be specific about this stuff.
I mean, I think that's a really important observation. And I'm going to play two things back. Two things people should internalize here on this, because again, everybody is sort of trying to navigate this reality of what do I ideally want my company to look like now that we are well past having to be virtual? You know, what does hybrid mean, et cetera? So number one, you just said, I think super important. And I know a lot of companies are conflicted still on this. I got to pick a lane. If I'm going to lean into remote, virtual, hire anywhere, that's fine. But you have to recognize that trying to get people back in the office when you're hiring people that are all over the place, those two things don't square. So that's number one, pick a lane. Secondly, what you said is when you start to create those, we're going to be in the office on whatever days, you really have to orchestrate a different experience. That's just not going to naturally happen.
You have to. It doesn't naturally happen. That's what we've learned. So back to picking a lane, everything else. What we saw was people in 2022, let's say, because 2021, the vaccine stuff was happening, but it didn't really work. And then people are afraid to come in the office. 2022, people flung their office doors open and said, all right, great, return, but you have hybrid now.
Right. And we saw crickets.
Didn't return. Crickets, yeah, right? Crickets. Part of it was that disconnect I described.
Yeah.
But part of it is why? Why would I bother if all of my teammates are remote now, if there's no reason? And I think that's why you're seeing mandates. Some mandates are really good. And what we saw, and we get the benefit, we sit on top of this and we saw, all right, in office is really important to us. And we saw the best practices were these concepts of these team days. And we said, you know, those really seem to be working, that on those days, office is very vibrant. It's full. We can talk about how to achieve that. And that was, we saw, all right, this is a model that we've seen that is really working, but you have to have coordination. If you just let it up to everyone else and let it off to other employees, it won't happen organically is what we found, and not in a sustained way.
Yeah. And it's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, what kind of things to incent employees to come in. You're like saying, you know, make sure you're orchestrating that environment so it's meaningful when they come in. Let's talk a little bit about technology. This is what you guys do for a living, provide technology to help companies manage this. So how does technology make the hybrid work experience better? Because even everything we're talking about, even for companies, I mean, I've yet to see a tech company say, look, everyone's back in the office 5 days a week. Boom. No one's doing that. So, which means by definition, people are going to have this hybrid environment. I've got employees that some days of the week, they're working at home. Some days they're in the office. So how does technology help with that reality?
Yeah, in a few ways. I'll touch on a couple of them. So the big point here is it's very easy. We talked about being one state or the other.
Yeah.
So that's the other problem. It's really easy to be remote or be in person. It's actually hard to be somewhere in between, which is hybrid, be in the office a few days a week. It's hard both on employees as well as it's hard on people running the office and trying to make sure that the office is as effective as possible because you have this massive amount of variability all the time. And if you remember, well, it was a long time ago when you worked in an office, but when we were back in the office 5 days a week, if you took a long weekend, we're out for 3 days and came back to the office, it was kind of disorienting.
Right.
And now think about that. We're asking people to do that every single week. So that's the first thing. Technology can help solve a whole bunch of those problems because we've advanced far enough that we can make that easier through displays throughout the office, to real-time views of what's going on, to helping people understand what they have access to automating. This is where we're going to talk about AI in a little bit, automating some of these processes so they don't have to do it at all, right? So making this stuff a lot easier for when they're in the office, because the in-office time, once again, is supposed to be very focused on getting as much collaborative benefit as you possibly can out of that time in the office. And for office managers, so think about office managers, very easy. When it's static and I knew there was going to be 400 people in my office every single day, then I could build and plan for that and create an office space and everything. But if it's like, all right, there's going to be 30 in on Mondays and 400 in on Tuesdays, and then maybe 90 or whatever, and a custom 5 customer visits on Wednesdays and 0 on Fridays.
Yeah.
How do I manage this, and how do I create a space that works for all of those different needs? So this is where technology can help with all of that. And I think what we've seen is flexible work makes the office that much more important, but also makes it that much more challenging. Yeah. And from both the employee perspective, as well as the people running the office, it can smooth out all of those bumps. And for us, you can imagine, for employees, you don't need another friction point for them using the office. Mm-hmm. There's enough friction between the commute, between they want to be home, everything else. You got to remove as much friction as possible. And we can look at our customers and their return to office initiatives are, on average, much more successful than people that don't have technology platform roles. Yeah.
And so let's click in a little bit about, again, you think about this work environment. I remember years ago when large consulting companies were one of the first to kind of go to this hoteling concept, right? Yep. You come in and you don't have a quote right. desk, and you check in and you go to a cube and you have that cube for the day, whatever. But they were an anomaly because they had, you know, a large workforce that was in and out and all that kind of stuff. But sort of that's come to everybody's world now. Like yep. you come in, and so the concept of, even if your company said, look, we're going to be an in-person 2 days a week, like you said, I mean, that office isn't like, hey, I go in and there's Thomas Law's office and it's got a picture of my, you know, my wife there and everything. It's like, that's not what you're doing anymore. So talk a little bit about how technology makes it easier for the office manager. What, you know, what are those environments looking like now? I mean, are they very dynamic and allocated each day, or how's that work?
Very dynamic. And the reason for it is you want vibrancy in the office. This is actually our mission of our company, is we want to create vibrant workplaces. And once again, if I'm working remote, if I'm coming to the office, I better be getting a different experience, which is very funny, by the way, because if you ask employees what they want when they come to the office, they're going to say, I want it to look like home. It's quiet. It's set up exactly how I want it. The kitchen is 15 feet away. At this point, 5 years after the pandemic, they want it, for the most part, except in some large cities where people have small apartments. For the most part, people want the office to look like home. Mm-hmm. So this is, we see this come up sometimes, that people do surveys like, hey, what do you want our new office to look like? And it all comes back, we want to look at home. But that's actually not what you want. Back to intentionality, I want the office to serve a very different function than what your home office does, especially when you have flexible work. So new offices are very dynamic, even for companies that are in 5 days a week. I was actually talking to one of our customers. It's a professional services firm where people travel a lot. So they're at 100% flex space where it's allocated every day. People reserve spaces. These are high level, highly paid employees and everything. But the fact of the matter is they're typically traveling 3 weeks a month. So what you don't want to do is have a bunch of offices, have cubicles and everything that three quarters of them are empty most of the time. Is that a vibrant workplace that on the days that you are coming to the office, you want to be at? No, right? So you actually size it for the amount people are actually using the office. And we do something very similar. So we have on Team Tuesdays, we actually have about 60 people come into our, our office here in our Boston office. We only have 40 desks. Now, all those are flexible. People reserve them. But you say, well, what do the other people do? So we have a few things. So first of all, we have lots of soft seating around. The whole point about soft seating is it's supposed to get people collaborating more. And we see that. Like you see, when you come in here, all that soft seating that most offices you walk in and it's just like these dead, empty desert zones of soft seating. If you come into a Robin office on a Tuesday, those are full of people talking. This is the whole point, right? The other thing is we looked at conference rooms. We have all this conference room space where people have meetings. People are in those. So we looked at the data, and what we found was the average person at Robin on Team Tuesdays, because we've been able to be intentional about its collaboration day, they're only sitting at their desk 30 or 40% of the time.
Wow.
So once again, why would I size my office such that I'm going to have a sea of half empty desks most of the day? That's not going to make the office vibrant at all. So looking at the data very specifically and then thinking about what am I trying to accomplish with my office? Because what we do, we give a lot of office tours. And listen, I love our technology. It's fantastic. But the first thing people comment is, wow, your office is so open and so vibrant. And it's because we actually have people using all the different parts of it. And that's not staged. It's what actually happens because we've built towards that and been intentional about creating that in our office.
You know, so one of the things I hear there, I just want to play this back, so if I'm accurately picking this up. So let's just think about a traditional office. Let's just say you have 100 cubes, you've got some meeting rooms, whatever, very static, people come in. And in today's new world, if you have an office and there's only 30 people that show up that day and they're scattered throughout that whole space randomly, it's not vibrant. What you're saying is you intentionally orchestrate and allocate that space dynamically to say, look, I'm just making this up, but we're going to compress those 30 people like next to each other today.
Yeah.
Physically and help. I mean, so we are going to, again, orchestrate, engineer that environment every day. Is that fair?
Exactly right. Yeah. And make sure the office then works. So once again, collaboration, maybe I can take those desks, put them more soft seating. Maybe it's people need more phone booths to have calls on, whatever it might be. It allows you to make the office work better for how employees are actually using it and how you want them to use it. Once again, which is even the more we talk about the workplace of the future, that's the more important part.
So let's talk about data, because you mentioned you were looking at data on how conference rooms were being allocated that provide insights. How can companies use data to better create, you know, a better environment?
Yeah. So you can use data a few ways. So let me start at the highest level, which is we talked about productivity. How is my business actually performing in the layer below just P&L, right? So I'm going to give you a very interesting story. I was talking to a large customer that's a big professional services firm. They rely on interns, are their talent pipeline. They have interns every summer who then get promoted to junior associates who then work their way up the ranks and ultimately become partners. And this is a longstanding, very successful professional services company. A few years ago during the, not the first summer of COVID, but you know, one of the kind of hard COVID summers, they had an entire intern class fail. Interns are there during the summer. And what they found was the partners, they all have their nice vacation house someplace and very comfortable and easy to work remotely from their vacation houses, wherever mm-hmm. those vacation houses were, right? So they weren't in the office with the interns. And they looked at all the other data. They looked at the demographic data. They looked at the test scores. They looked at the schools. They looked at everything else, the intern class. And they couldn't find any other reason why this intern class failed, except that the partners weren't in the office too. Huh. So this is like back to data intentionality. Sometimes we think, oh, well, geez, it's just the junior people, but you can't just have the junior people in the office. You need someone right. to actually mentor and train them needs to be in the office too. Mm-hmm. And often what we found is in some places, actually the junior people are more willing to come into the office. It's the more senior people that right. don't want to come into the office. So when right. we talk about data, I've talked a lot about office data, which I'll cover here, but you actually got to look more broadly across that. So then the next piece down is, so we talk about performance data. The next piece down is, how are people actually sitting in the office? So there's some great research that shows that if you sit within 20 feet of a high performer, you get a 15% performance boost in your own performance. Mm-hmm. So do you know why? Why do you think you get that performance boost?
Well, I'm just assuming that the ability to see how they operate and emulate that is going up, right?
Absolutely right. In two important ways. So first is hearing how they talk to customers, hear how they deal with issues, all of that stuff. So then I can hear and be like, oh yeah, I like that part of the pitch Thomas just gave. So therefore I'm going to emulate that. Mm-hmm. But there's actually a really important part is peer pressure. Mm-hmm. I see how hard you work and I emulate how hard you work. It's just like going to the gym. I go to the gym and if someone's working out on the treadmill really hard next to me, then I'm like more likely to work out hard. It's why people do CrossFit classes and do all this other stuff all the time, right? It's back to one of the really important parts of the office. And oftentimes we think that everyone is equally motivated. The fact of the matter is a big piece of intrinsically motivated people. You're obviously one. You went remote in the 1990s. Not everyone is that way. A lot of people actually need extrinsic motivation. Yep. Right. They need other people around, which is why gyms, why all this other stuff is so popular. If everyone could be motivated on their own, then home gyms would be amazing. They wouldn't be coat racks most of the time. Right.
Yep.
So then being thoughtful about, all right, how are teams performing based on how they're sitting? What is my office environment? And then we can start looking at the office data, the stuff I just talked about. How often are people actually sitting in using rooms for the purpose we want? Are we using it for customer visits? How often are customers coming? Are meeting with them one-on-one really important or not? Is that a way for us to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace? Like I could go down to the office data, but I think it starts with what are we trying to achieve? And I think that's what most organizations, once again, we saw the best in class organizations clearly defining that. And then the office data flows. We said, all right, that's great. Like we're going to copy that. Where we see people getting it wrong is they just look at the office data, which we produce reams of it. But if you don't know what you're trying to achieve, then what good is the data going to do you, right?
One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas, like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free.
So, you know, what I think is super interesting about what you just put on the table is, you know, I believe deeply that we are entering a new generation of management here in terms of a lot more of our decisions are going to be data/model driven. And AI is the accelerator for this, right? So we can now take data, put it into models, and come back and get answers that are better than we were coming up with before on our own, right? So that's just a general backdrop. You know, you put on the table is that that concept can and should be applied to how you are designing your office experience.
Absolutely right.
You know, you could be using data and models to be your guide to create the most dynamic, effective environment possible. And I would couple that with, I think the biggest failure I see with these RTO mandates is, again, if it's a feeling and the reality is you have an executive team is like, look, we're sick of this crap. We want employees back in the office. We want eyes on employees. We're losing our culture. You know, everybody back in 2 days a week, 3 days a week. But there's no intelligent design behind that, which is what you just articulated.
Exactly.
That's going to land like a thud.
Yeah.
Because employees are going to resent it.
It's why 5 years later, we're still talking about it.
That's why. Right? That's absolutely right. So what you're saying is, look, you can't just mandate this. You have to put intelligent design behind it. And there now is data and tools you can use to help with that intelligent design. And there's, you know, multiple, you know, different attributes you can be focused on to create the best environment. I mean, I think that that is a, quite frankly, a missing component in this conversation for most companies when they're trying to balance this optimize the hybrid and balance this how much, you know, back to the office, is there's not a lot of intelligent design behind it.
That's exactly right. And most folks just look at badge data. So they say, all right, this is how many people walked in the door. But once again, what is that telling you? It's not telling you the things I just told you, which is people doing calls all day by themselves in conference rooms. Okay, then what's the point of that? Or the team that's spread out everywhere, then maybe that's a decision. If you want people to be in the office, then maybe that team either shouldn't be in the office or you need to think about the team. You know, what we saw, we had a relatively loose policy around employee relocations. So back to our journey, we were hiring a bunch of people in the office, but then I saw this leaky bucket that managers be like, oh yeah, you're going to relocate to wherever. And they were allowing folks to do that. And I said, well, wait a second. We're trying to build an office culture here. That's not going to allow us to do it. So I think having a consistent message across everything, which some companies have done really well, but I think the majority of organizations still haven't. And when I had to go around and talk, it's still like, yeah, we're supposed to be in 3 days a week and that's it. Supposed to be in 2 days a week, but all this other stuff is still going on. And so therefore, and nobody's adhering to the 2 to 3 days a week.
Yeah, well, it goes back to your comment on hiring. So what you're saying is, it's your hiring policy, your relocation policy. If you have this leaky bucket on some of these policies and yet you're, quote, trying to create, you know, an in-office culture, that doesn't work. But, you know, I want to pick on this badge data because I really am super empathetic, quite frankly, to the employee's perspective on all of this.
Yeah.
And I get, I'm an executive, I'm a manager. I mean, I understand the management perspective of why you want to get people back. But I take the employee side of it as, again, you got to give me a reason here, right? And this is what I believe is worst case scenario and is playing out again and again and again. Companies A, issue an RTO policy.
Yep.
B, they say, we're going to track your badge data. And so now I feel like I'm, you know, I'm in a communist state here where they're, you know, managing where I go, right? So now they're telling me, you know, I'm a professional, but now you're checking when I badge in and when I badge out. And the third point is if I went, okay, fine, I'll be a good soldier. I'll come in, I'll badge in. And I come in And again, I might as well be at home because I'm sitting by myself, as you mentioned, in a meeting room. That you put all that together, we've just created the worst case scenario for employee motivation.
Yes.
I just feel like you mandated me to come in for no apparent benefit to either me or the company. Why? That doesn't feel good at all. So, and I do think that's what a lot of companies right now, and then they go, why are my employees frustrated? Why are they mad at me? Why are they resisting this? Because there's really no upside for anybody in that, in that scenario.
Yeah. And the company is not getting the benefit of the employees coming in. It's literally just checking a box. And unfortunately, this does take time. I've talked to you about our journey. And listen, we're in the middle of it. I see everything. I see all the best practices. I see everything all day long. And I clearly have told you that we've been on a journey in getting this right and making sure that, and it will continue to be a journey. I'm not saying, hey, problem solved, mission accomplished in any way, shape, or form. But we're well along the way, and I feel really good about the fact that we're well along the way. It's hard, right? But it requires more than, I think this is what is frustrating, is we want everyone to just sort of show up and do what's in our head and not have to spend time on it. And this is the frustration. So I understand this because I get it myself, Thomas, but I actually don't want to be legislating this stuff.
Right.
Back to where we started this conversation. I just want to be like, hey, listen, everyone, I want you in a few days a week. You have some flexibility around that. I want us to go back to what it was like in 2019, but you're all in a few days a week and take some time off if you need to. I didn't watch your badge data in 2019. If you needed to take a day off to take care of your dog, like you did it then, or you needed to work from home that day because there was a snow day, you did it. I didn't have to like legislate all of that stuff. And now all of a sudden we're in this world because of this disconnect I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And we're still trying to find that point of stasis that we don't know where that is yet. And I think that's why you see this push and pull. But there's some real things. You know, once again, you see it from a high performer who's intrinsically motivated. I'll ask you this question. What portion of the population do you think is intrinsically motivated that can do their absolute best on their own remotely without being around other people all like in person?
So I'm going to respond to that with an observation, right? So first of all, I think, you know, and again, I put on the table, I've been a remote employee for a long time. I know I'm an anomaly. I've spoken to enough of my professionals over the years and colleagues and stuff, and they're like, I could not do that. I just couldn't do it for lots of different reasons, right? It's not just motivation. It's just some people need more structures, a lot of different reasons, right? So I do think that that is an exception, not the rule. First of all, I completely on board that. But secondly, I think, you know, a really, really important point you made, and this is something that I've thought about a lot in this current environment that is still very virtual, is this issue of mentoring.
Yeah.
Is this issue of how you get younger employees, and you know, and this is very personal to me. My son's about 30 years old. He's a software developer. So a big chunk of his career has been virtual. He literally just early this week moved to San Francisco so he could have the opportunity to go into the office X amount of days a week.
Yeah.
And part of that is I know that he craves what you're describing. And so I think you got to create an environment where people can get mentored. And you cannot do that in virtual. You know, I don't know how you solve for that in a completely virtual world.
It's back to the silos. But I mean, once again, we talk about all the data around that. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
I appreciate all that perspective. I think it's about 30%. And so we set targets in Robin. So I say, all right, 70% of the company, I want to be hybrid in the office and 30% are remote. Because I've been in tech for 20 years now. My anecdotal guess is about 30% of people are actually good about really being amazing at, in remote roles. So you can, once again, you can make the decision, hey, I'm going to just hire and aim for that. Yeah. That to me limits your hiring pool more than saying, hey, I want to hire around my city or something. So once again, we talk about intentionality and choices.
Yeah.
The choice we've made is, hey, we're going to broaden that. But that means that we're going to have in-person is going to be an important part of what we're doing.
So I have a follow-up question on that because I think this is super fascinating, right? So, and I completely on board that breakdown, right? So let's say the reality is 30% of the people you could hire would be completely rock stars, remote. They're just, they got the personality for it, whatever. Okay, fine. But what have you seen either yourself or, you know, other companies? You have to navigate this world where, you know, you're making these hires and you do find this profile and say, like, we're going to hire this person not in Boston, got the right skills, they're going to be in Chicago, we're going to let them be remote for a bunch of reasons, and we're completely confident they've got a track record, it's going to work out. We're completely fine with it, okay? But now you have to justify that with the other people that are sitting in Boston who say, well, wait a minute, I want to go. I want to live in Chicago. So give me the, well, how do you navigate that? That's the landmine, right? So what do you do there?
It's a huge issue.
Yeah.
It's a landmine. This is how we've started to figure out, but once again, definitely not solved here. My take on this, because I've worked, to your point, I've worked at companies and my entire career in tech was with remote employees.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dynamic then was, before pandemic, was, hey, you're remote. So I'm actually got to make up for the fact that you're remote. So I've got to do more of the collaboration stuff, building the relationships in the office. I got to do the stuff that you can't do. Yeah. And when you think about team dynamics, that was actually the team dynamic. And I actually think that's the important part, Thomas. So you need people in the office that you're not forcing to come in, that are coming in, kicking in, screaming. You need people in the office that want to be in the office,
right,
that are willing to understand that dynamic and say, hey, Thomas, I'm in the office. You're remote. That means I'm going to do some of this stuff. You're probably amazing a bunch of other stuff, but the stuff that needs collaboration in the office, relationship building, taking people out to coffee, meeting customers in person, whatever, I'm going to do that stuff. And actually, I like doing those things. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to feel animosity towards you because you get to live in Chicago, which is where you want to live. And I think most organizations, having begun, we're trying to figure that out, Robin. I think we're doing a decent job. We're on the path, but exactly right. Because if everyone looks at it and say, well, that person's remote, why the heck do I, you're never going to build, when we talk about building a really good, flexible hybrid culture with an in-person component, you're never going to build it if that's the dynamic in your company.
Yeah, no, it's tricky. And I do believe the home run, right? So the ideal world is if you're a company and you can completely take advantage of that 70-30 world. In other words, you say, look, I've got great employees that I've hired that are in the office. I also can tap into some great remote talent where it makes sense and I can maximize that. I think that is competitive advantage, right? As opposed to having a blunt model where you're like, look, everybody's, you know, so it's, but to make that work, it is tricky. It is, there's no, you know, it's complex. I'm watching the clock. I got one more question for you, and that is sort of on the futures, right? So again, I think we've got a lot of great thoughts on the table here that, again, I think people are missing on how to orchestrate and create and navigate this new world, right, of getting people back in the office. But what do you see for the future? You know, so you guys, you know, you're focused on technology, you're focused on providing platforms that make the workplace better. What are you excited about in terms of futures?
Yeah, I think people are dialing in on what a flexible office looks like. I think that's great. I think that'll be benefits for everyone involved. You know, I talked about our own journey here. Once again, we've emulated that based on the great customers that we're lucky to have who are doing a lot of the same thing. Some of them have bigger budgets than us. So they're doing it even better in many ways. So I think that gets us really excited about that. I think there is a piece of human connection we're missing here. And I'll talk about that twice. Is what we know back to remote work is things like depression and anxiety rates skyrocketed during the pandemic and they haven't come down. And a lot of more and more research is tying that to loneliness. And so I think this ability of getting people together that people talk about those places, right? The bowling alleys, the churches, and work was the last common place that people had together. And a lot of folks have lost that. And we're seeing that as a society, how that impacts. I think we're seeing that come back too. It's bumpy and there's lots of pain along the way, but I'll sort of describe it as it's easy for me to sit in the couch and eat potato chips rather than go for a run. But I know long term, I'm better off going for a run. And I think we're going in that, we're a little bit in that transition right now. We're figuring that out. But actually, that gives me lots of hope. I think that's a real good thing. And doing it with the intentionality we talked about. The final thing I'll touch on is AI in all of this. And I'm going to talk about it more broadly because it'll make the office experience better. We're applying agents and intelligence all through our platform. I won't go into that. I'll talk about the impact of AI on the workforce. When you think about the impact of AI in the workforce and the types of jobs that can be automated, do you think in-office becomes more important or less important?
Oh, I think in-office can become more important because...
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
The type of administrative jobs, like the types of jobs that are very easily done heads down remotely, just writing, you know, writing lots and lots of line of code. AI agents can do all this stuff. What becomes more important? Architecture, problem solving, the stuff that that doesn't do, the stuff that you're more likely to have to work with a team. Yeah. Some of it can be done remotely, but it makes in-person done even more importantly, especially as our spam filters are filled with AI chatter from people trying to sell us stuff. Probably in-person sales probably becomes a little more important again too in all of that and making that human connection. So I think when we think about the future for the office, I think that it will bounce back. It will be a flexible model that we're still working through. But I think AI makes in-person on a whole bunch of levels even more important as we think about more broad scale adoption of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think this is a very important and interesting, you know, inflection point for the industry, for a lot of tech companies, because again, they're just now starting to force this issue, right? To swing the pendulum back. And I don't disagree with why. I think it does need to come back here a little bit. But as we've talked about here, I think in a really constructive way, you really have to architect that. This is not something that is just, you know, you order it, it's going to magically happen. And I think it's a huge lesson for the audience to think about, you know, what they're doing. So that, you know, that leads me to, I always like to close these with a question for the day. And, you know, even with these return to office mandates, remote employees and hybrid, that's going to be our world. That's going to be our world. And so the question is for our audience, how effectively are you really supporting that new hybrid workforce? So thank you, Michael, for joining us. Cheers, everybody. Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSIA Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsia.com/intelligence.